Tonight, and it's good to have someone turn that back light off. Thank you. Dave Larson, good to have you back in the house.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
They were gone traveling. It's good to have them as well as our Army Reserve. No, Navy. Excuse me. Navy Reserve. I do that. It just really gets them, doesn't it? I am glad that BJ did a lesson on Proverbs on words. Didn't you do it? No. Yeah, your words have to be rightly chosen. And speaking of that, if you didn't get the handout, they're in the back. You can get them on the way out. I always leave a mistake in them intentionally, just so you can find them and have something to talk to me about. So if you find it, that's good. It just shows you only God is good and only God is perfect, and that's the way it should be. Actually, I just didn't have time for my wife to edit it. But we are in our Sunday night series about Proverbs, and it's fascinating to look at the Proverbs, especially in these chunks when you take a theme. Like tonight, we're going to talk about family, because you're surprised, on one hand, how much is said about a certain topic. And again, how much wisdom is there? And then you're kind of, it's a daunting task. How do we present that in a 45-minute section? Well, obviously, it's impossible. So we're just going to hit some of the highlights of it. And then it makes me think that it's time for us to have a class on family. I've talked about it with the elders before, and maybe we'll mention here a little bit at the end. But when you consider family, it's so important, isn't it, the whole subject? And we talked about a good reputation last time, you know, and what's in a name. But your family name is that when you're given at your birth. You had no choice about it. And your parents raise you or do not raise you. By default, they turn you into something. And that's really all on them. And the type of marriage they have, you really have no say in that. That's all up to them. And so it's so imperative that we as responsible adults and Christians look at this subject very seriously, because not only are we influencing our own lives and potentially our salvation, we're influencing the salvation and the eternal outcome of our children we bring into this world. It is so serious. And then also we're modeling for others that watch us as well. And so you know, you can give me a name and say, well, it's interesting. Did I show you this? My name's 115th most popular in the whole United States. That's not very good. But 99% are named Jack are males. Well, I'd like to meet the female that's named Jack. Jackie is a different name, by the way. But so don't confuse it. But names are important, but I'd suggest families are more important. Here we have this proverb, he who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. In other words, the whirlwind. You're going to have troubles. And so we're going to talk about family and way we can build better families, a better home. Because we all have one, don't we? We all come from a family, whether it's a broken one or it's an amazing family. We all have a family. And we might want better families, or we might just thank God daily for the family we have. But we all have one. How can we have a better one? So that's what we're going to talk about. But let me just mention the purpose of a family. It is the primary institution that creates, was the foundation and the building block of all society, of all nations, all cultures, and it's essential, the health of the family, to the church as well. Because it's in the family, two principal elements, the marriage and parenting. It's the only place God intended procreation to take place. It's the only place where a man and woman are supposed to live together as husband and wife, and it's supposed to be a man and a woman. And it models to the world the characteristics of God himself. We know that because husband loves your wives as Christ loved the church, and wives submit to the husband as, you know, you submit to Christ. And the way we parent, we're modeling to our children what a loving father is, aren't we not? And so it's so the family goes, can we say so the church goes? It's so important. And when you see the demise of the family today, in our culture especially, I would suggest that's largely the reason we see the demise of our entire culture. And unless something turns that around, it will continue to decline. We won't be the first society to see that. But it doesn't mean that you and I have to be part of it, right? We can raise strong, healthy, good families. And it's just if we're going to take this subject serious. I love this text, and I'm not going to read a lot of texts because there's too many of them. I'm going to try to read one central one in each point. But here in Proverbs 24, there's actually two verses here. Verse 3, by a wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Now, you might think, man, this is a daunting task. How do I raise kids? How do I stay married? You know what's interesting? My parents' generation, pretty much everyone lived older years and stayed married to one spouse. And so they all boasted being married 45, 50 years. Is that not true? Generally, you know, there's exceptions. Now, today, you're still married? 30 years? Way to go. Now, why are people so excited about that? Because so many marriages end in a divorce or an end. And here you say, how am I going to keep my family together? And that's a good question. And here's the answer. With wisdom, a home is built. With knowledge and understanding. And you're going to have riches in your family if you get the right wisdom. So that's our only lesson. You can have a better family if you apply diligently the wisdom found in the Proverbs. You can, but we have to take it very, very seriously. So we're going to look at 3 points. How do you make a family? You know, what are the ingredients to make a family to put together? Like the material. You know, it's not cement and stone and 2x4s, but what do you need? Then how do you build it? And then we're going to talk about discipline just briefly. So with that idea, we're going to consider, first of all, how you build a family. There's some essential parts. And so we can have fun with this, but it's serious. But you got to find a good husband, right? And I say a good man because, well, look at this verse right here. In Proverbs 20, verse 6 and verse 7. No doubt the wise man has seen this a lot, and we could echo it too. Many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? Oh, I'll be good to you. I'll take care of you. I'll love you and you only. I mean, you're the love of life. You make me complete. You make me want to be a better person. You know, all those things may be true, but often they're said just to woo the woman. And then afterwards, what about all those great words? They're gone. And that's why you ask, who can find a trustworthy man? And it's interesting that the same condition existed in their day when this was written as today. And so women are, I got to be careful. Wisdom, right? We have to go review your lesson on words. Laura Schlesinger wrote a book called The 10 Stupid Things Women Do. See, I'm going to quote her, not myself. And you ought to read that book. But it's interesting. In Genesis 3, God told a woman, your husband will rule over and your desire will be for him. That's natural, inherent in every woman in their spiritual DNA to want a man in their life to provide her security and to protect her. Doesn't mean she can't be an independent woman. Doesn't mean she can't consider a field and buy it. It doesn't mean she can't be wildly successful in different areas of life. But fundamental to her being is she wants a man. She desires that. And so sometimes that feeling is so strong to make a family, they'll listen to the first guy that comes along with a good pitch and tell her all the right things. And then it's just trouble because a lot of men are jerks and they'll misplay women. It's so sad, it's true. I'm part of that race, the male race, but it's true. And so a woman has to be very astute and aware of this. But a righteous man walks in his integrity. How blessed are his sons after him. There are good men. And so where are you going to look? I'll just show a couple other verses. Another guy, but with this line of thinking, will a guy wear a shirt like that when he's introduced himself to you? When do you find that out? Before you're married or after you're married? You want to find it out before, but generally people find it out afterwards. Whoa, you promised. And what about, it's too late then, isn't it? And that's very important. Now we're going to make some comments about how you can find a good man when we talk about how to find a good woman as well. But a couple other verses on there. I don't want to leave that subject. I'm sorry. In Proverbs, I had them up there on the board. In chapter 11, 29, he who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. The foolish will be servant to the wise-hearted. In other words, there are some men that are just fools. And that's the last person you want to marry as a husband. Verse chapter 23 and 24, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. And he who sires a wise son will be glad in him. In other words, there can be righteous men, and you're going to get wonderful children and sons because of that. But the opposite is marrying an unrighteous man. Proverbs 27 and verse 8. Like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is the man who wanders from his home. Now, what's he talking about that? A man who has adulterous eyes. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this story. Well, I'll settle him down once I marry him. You know, men will be men, but once we're married, that'll stop. If they're cheating now, they'll be cheating then. And so here's the first way you're going to find out if you should marry this guy. What is he doing now? Does he lie? Does he cheat? Is he dishonest? Is he industrious? Is he progressing? Is he trying to better his life without you in it before you met him? Was he trying to do that? Because if he's doing that without you, the chances are he'll continue to do that after you get married. But if all of a sudden he's changed his life because he met you, you can better worry that he's doing it just to impress you. And that as soon as you get married, he didn't have to impress you anymore. He'll go back to his old ways. It happens a lot. Now, it doesn't mean a woman can't change a man for good. She can inspire him because that does happen. But we have to be very careful. Now, same thing is said of a woman. You got to add now, you got a good man. He's a righteous man that fears God. Now we got to find a good woman. Proverbs says that if it's a question, an excellent wife, who can find her? Now, inherent in that question, there are not many of them around, or it's hard to find them. Her worth is far above jewels. Now, the wise men said that. So if you'd rather have money or a good wife, an excellent wife, what should you choose? Well, a bad wife, you'll lose all your money. An excellent wife, you'll have an excellent wife and you'll probably make more money, right? You know, because she will be that helpmeet and that support that you want. So there's a lot of scriptures that say that some of the women, though, if you marry them, they'll be a curse. Now, I didn't say that. The wise men said it. And the other hand, there's some women that if you marry, they'll be a blessing. Now, it's true with men, but there seems to be more of the proverb to speak about the women in this generic. So an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness to his bones, just makes him sick to his very bones. Chapter 12, verse 4, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. What does that verse tell you about finding a good wife? Where does she come from? You've been graced by the Lord. So how am I going to find her? And if you're looking for a mate, and some of our young people aren't here, that's fine. If it's parents, you need to talk to them this way. Here would be my suggestion. You stay faithful to Christ. You be the best Christian you can be. You don't worry about getting married. God will bring you a wife. Because here, if you found a good wife, you've got favor from the Lord. Who blessed you? God did. There's another verse that says exactly the same thing. Two more. We'll see this one. Proverbs 19, verse 14. Houses and riches are inheritance from the fathers. In other words, there are a lot of people that are rich because it's old money. They inherit it from their family. But a prudent wife, who does that come from? He says it's a blessing from God himself. And so it's almost like... For people in the world, I don't know how they choose their spouse. Sometimes it's on looks. Sometimes it's on potential for make money. Sometimes, I don't know what they do. But how would a Christian choose their spouse? Here's what I suggest. If you want to find a good spouse, you be by the kind of person that they'd be attracted to. Everything you want in them. I want a good Christian woman. I want her to fear the Lord. I want her to have children. I want her to have all these good values and modesty and be a servant. You know, you're pretty much your superwoman. And then what do you have to be to attract that kind of woman? You be a super Christian man. Because why would she even look at you if she was that godly woman that you desire and you're living an ungodly life? Why would she even give you a second thought? She wouldn't. Because being a godly woman, she's looking for a godly man. Now, is it true the other way around? What kind of man do you want for a husband? Well, I want a godly man who's spiritually minded, that's going to lead my family and lead me and loves God and will pray openly, and he's not afraid to express himself emotionally. He's vulnerable and all these things about men that they have to be. Super Christian, you know, right? Just sort of like Paul and Timothy and Apollos and King David all wrapped up into one with a little bit of Samson, you know? Well, then be the kind of godly woman you see in Proverbs 30, right? 31. Thank you. 31. And because if you aren't that excellent woman, this man will walk on by you, won't he? Now, there's the lesson. You want a good marriage and you're already married and you're not happy with your spouse, change yourself. Change yourself. Quit complaining about who your spouse is or isn't and start looking at yourself, because I married them. And likely, I have set up the environment to make them what they are. And I have to start changing myself. And there's a little saying that when you change, things will change around you. People are magically changed too. And so it starts there. But you got to find a good wife. It's better to live in a corner roof than in a house shared by a contentious woman. Solomon had a lot of wives. Maybe he had one of these. I don't know. He says the same thing. It's a nagging wife is like a dripping faucet, right? Not that men can't be this way, but he's speaking about women himself. So when you look at that, you have to take it very, very seriously. Now we're going to have to add another ingredient to make godly family, and it's children. So you found the perfect spouse, and you're the perfect spouse to them, and it's just bliss. And then the question up, should we have children? And a lot of people, do we have to and ruin everything? Are there more and more people today that choose not to have children? And you know why that is? Because they see all the problems there are in raising children in today's society. And they see how a lot of children turn out. So a lot of people have concluded that you can't raise godly children in today's society. And so they choose not to. Sometimes it's out of selfishness, though, too. They don't want to have the problems of children. And I'll tell you, reading the Proverbs, that's understandable. Because children can be the greatest joy in your life, but Solomon also says they can be the greatest point of sorrow that you've ever had in your life. Now you choose, you want one or not. But we're going to go back to our original premise. If you apply diligently the wisdom found in the Proverbs, can you have good children? Yes, you can. It's when we fall short sometimes is when the children mess up. I mean, after all, they're the cutest thing in the world, aren't they? The problem is they grow up into teens, and then they grow up into young adults, and they leave home, and they're on their own. We've all done that. Look what this text says of Proverbs 127. We all know it, but it's, thank you, Psalms 127. I've had a really hard time today with my words, and I've noticed some other people have had too. It must be the weather. Is that fair? 127, verse 3. Behold, children are a gift of God. That's how we have to view them. They're a gift from God to us and to the world. And that should change our perception about what children are. They're not a problem. They're a gift from God, and he only gives good gifts. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is a man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. So he views a man with a lot of children as having his quiver of arrows full. So he's always able to pull another arrow and shoot it out. And so here's a warrior for God, and he's trying to make a difference in this dark world by being a light. And he's got all these children that he's raised up in the Lord, and they're going out, and they're all going to be lights as well. Could you make a difference that way? Now, Glenn's not here, but he comes from a family of 12. Marvin comes from a family of 11 kids in his family. Was their parents' quiver full? Yeah, and that was often the norm when you lived on the farm. Now, when that happened, did they have a lot of wealth? No. But I would suggest these two men have turned out all right. It's not the wealth that you provide your children or the lack of wealth and living in just almost poverty that is the reason for their demise. The reason is not applying the wisdom found in the Proverbs. So let's take a look at some of the things he has to say. Because wisdom says that children are part of this godly family. They're a gift of the Lord. So a wise son makes a father glad. They're so proud of him, right, and what they're doing. But a foolish son is a grief to his mother. That would go to the father as well, but he's just making the contrast. Here's one son. He's doing what is right. He's, man, just makes me so glad I had you. But then a foolish son, it causes the mother and the father, but the mother just to grieve and cry over him in her sleep or in her bed because of some of the choices that he makes. He who sires a fool does to his own sorrow. And a father of a fool has no joy because he's constantly got problems he has to deal with and heartaches. Proverbs 29:31, a man who loves wisdom makes his father glad. So if a child grows up and loves wisdom as well, his parents have reason to rejoice. But on the other hand, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. Now, I put him a person up there in handcuffs. And I thought about it, whether I should say this or not, but I will. John and I have a brother that at one time ran away, stole a car, and ended up in jail. And I don't remember a lot of times mom crying. Maybe you do, John, more. But that was one of the times. I mean, I can't imagine the heartache of knowing your own child's in jail because of choices they've made. Now, there's always life after that, I know. But initially, that's the bitterness that he's talking about. So when you look at that, they're a gift of the Lord. They can great, bring you great joy or great sorrow. Who wants to have a child? We say, well, it's a gamble. Well, no, it's not, because there's two other passages we have to look at, and they're, can anyone guess where they are, or at least what they say? I think I heard someone say it. Yeah. Proverbs 17, let's go there. Excuse me. No, we're going to save it actually later, for later. Hang on, okay? I'm going to add one more element to our family here. Who else is missing? We got a husband and a wife. And they make two parents because we now have children. Who else are we going to add to this family? Well, I'm talking about just on earth, from an earthly perspective. All right, it's in your outline. If you saw, you got it. We're going to add the extended family, grandchildren. Now, that can get kind of big, can't it? And you say, what, a mother-in-law? Yes, a mother-in-law. Yeah, you mean uncles and aunts and cousins? Yes. And are they a blessing or are they a curse? Well, I guess it depends on what family you're part of. Then we'll read in 1 Timothy chapter 5 that if you don't take care of your own family, and includes their who? Grandparents, you're worse than an unbeliever. So God, when he looks at a family, it's extended beyond just husband and wife and immediate children. It extends to grandparents and grandchildren. And it goes out wide too. And so I love this verse right here. Probably because I'm finally getting old and catching up with some of you, right? Grandchildren are the crown of old men. So if you have grandchildren, that makes you what? Old. And Dave is finally getting used to that because he's in his 60s now. And how many grandchildren?
9 and 1 great-grand.
Now that's really old. And when you have great grand. And I know some of you are even older because you have more, but I'm not going to embarrass you. I'll only embarrass Dave, all right? The glory of sons is their fathers. Isn't that a beautiful thing, though? There's something about grandchildren, and everyone says it's that way, but it's true. When you finally get one, you go, wow, it was all worth it just to have this little Miko, you know? So they are wonderful. The glory of young men is their strength, but the honor of old men is their gray hair. Don't use Grecian Formula 44, because your gray hair is your glory. Does that speak of just gray hair of what? Men, it's their strength. Old men, it's what? Their wisdom. That's their strength. That's where their glory is. And so when you look at that, Psalms 128, a very interesting verse, verse 5 and 6. Here's a blessing to Israel. And what does a blessing include? You live a blessed life from God if, well, that you may see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your grand, your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. What is a blessed life? When you grow old enough and you get to have grandchildren and enjoy them. That's a blessing from God that is being prayed upon Jerusalem. And that's the prayer we'd pray for all of us. So now we have really a complete family, right? A husband and wife, children, and an extended family. Now, I'm giving the general picture. Could a husband and wife be faithful Christians and glorify God in their life and never have children? Absolutely. Can you be a faithful single person, never marry, and glorify God and bring lots of glory to Him and go to heaven? Yes. Do you have to be married? No. But we are talking about families. This is what makes a family. We're not saying you have to be partake in this, but if you're going to be a family, this is a picture of one, generally. And there's always exceptions. Because can you adopt to get them into your family? Of course. But procreation takes place in God's mind where? In the family. Everything else is an exception. Adoption is not the norm. It means someone died or there was some problem or trauma that you had to adopt that child from their real biological parents and put them in yours. Was that God's plan from the beginning? No. We're talking about the ideal. Does it make it wrong? No. In fact, he tells Israel that if your father dies, his brother is supposed to take you and actually bear your children, but who's supposed to adopt the kids as well? You send them out? No, you take them as your own. And so God's made provision of that, and I made a sidebar discussion. I'm just trying to say, don't feel bad if you're not part of this. But if you're part of a family, and we all have one, how are we going to make it successful? I'll just show a few verses, and then we'll have to talk about this more in detail later. First of all, I love this one here, Proverbs 15, verse 16. Better is a little food, a little money, a little clothing, a little shelter, with fear of the Lord, than great treasures with trouble in your family. So if you had to choose one of two things, having the fear of God in your family or lots of money, what would you choose? The wise man says, this is much, much better. Because it doesn't have to be this way, but have you seen or witnessed people that are successful in the world's eyes, but have miserable, broken families? They fight, argue, and they end up in divorce, and they might be on their third or fourth spouse at this time. Because something was wrong. They didn't instill godly wisdom. They had worldly wisdom, how to be successful financially, but they didn't put in godly wisdom. Now, if you put godly wisdom in your family, it doesn't mean you won't be wealthy too. You could have both, but it has to prioritize, has to be God and a fear of God in your family. We're going to come back to this in a full circle. The next thing is love. That's interesting. John and I, like a lot of you, Dad worked hard, didn't he? And he was self-employed, and with six kids, it was everything from to feed those kids. It was hand to mouth, right? But when there's a fear of God in your family, and when there's love, When you're a young kid, do you know that you're poor?
Yeah.
No, you don't know you're poor until you're around kids that are rich later. But that's okay. But if you feel love, you feel like you're the richest kid in the world. Now, I honestly believe growing up that every family was like ours, that dad and mom stayed together until they died, and they loved you. We went to church all the time. We helped people. There wasn't a day that, or a month that mom and dad weren't having people come into our home, just their hospitality. I thought every family was that way. We always had people over to the house. And so in my naive mind, when I got out on my own and started talking to people and realized they come from broken families and all that, I realized, wow, how blessed we were to have a family that loved us. Our parents. And that's what he says here. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than the fattened ox served with hatred. In other words, you might have a lot of great food and all the best food in the world, but if there's no love, man, it'd better if you just had a few meagly pieces of vegetable or some rice. Now that's the contrast he's making. The same thing is said in chapter 17 in verse 1. Better is a dry morsel and quietness with it than a house full of feasting with strife. A lot of families are so much fighting and bickering, but they have lots of material things. He says it'd be better if you just had a crumb, but you had peace in your house. So if you want to have a happy family, provide the fear of God, you provide love, and you make sure it's a sanctuary, a peace. That those children and that husband and that wife can come home from the strife and the ugliness of the world, and they can come home and rest in this refuge. It's a sanctuary from the world, isn't it? There's peace. You don't raise your voice. You don't talk ugly to each other. That's what they do in the world. This is a place where we edify each other. We renew each other. We bring ourselves closer to each other and to God. And as we do that, we can become more like lights in the world. Isn't it desperately needed to have that place of peace and quiet rest? That's what a home is supposed to be. And yet so many of them are so full of strife and hatred. Then he says, all the way back to where we started, the fear of God, you got to just invite God in. There's so many godless families in the world. And so often, a lot of Christian homes don't allow God to be the center of their family. So when I say invite him in, he's a permanent resident. Again, I'll have to go back to what John and I grew up with. I remember the hallway, there's a 90-degree angle to a bedroom there, and there are two bedrooms here, something like that. And mom would stand right on the corner at night with all the doors open and read out of the children's, storybook Bible. And I remember hearing those stories coming down the hall. Now, sometimes as kids, we wouldn't want to listen. We'd be wrestling. Now, be quiet in there. Okay. Or I'm sending your dad in. Okay. But you remember those stories. That's how I remember a lot of those stories. And so what does it mean to invite God in? That you talk about him. That you have devotionals in your home. You have date night for the husband and wife. You have family night. Every night should be a God night. That somewhere you talk about him, include him in your life. That there is reading of scripture and we're not afraid to pray and have all the children pray. And pray with them before they go to bed. You go to services because, here it is. If you want to have the perfect wife, you be what? The perfect Christian man. This is where it's really tough. If you want perfect godly children, you be the perfect godly parent. Because they're going to follow your example. And if you put other things first in your life, they will do the same. They'll learn that, yeah, you only have to serve God to this level. But when other things get in the way, they're more important. You go ahead and do that, because I saw Dad do that. And I can't explain why our children aren't all faithful. But I look back, I can say two things. I spent too much time in my spiritual ministry to others rather than ministering to them spiritually. And I got distracted in my own life, doing things that kept me away from home. And so a lot of it's on me. And I take that seriously. And you say, well, how can you say that? Because children are their own independent persons. We don't have time, but we'll just introduce it. We have to dare to discipline. This is pretty much the current family, right? They're all distracted doing their own thing, right? Even dad's in and on it, right? And the mom's going, oh my, this is not what I planned when I said I do, okay? Well, what does discipline mean? Primarily the word means to train. The word is used many times in the book of Proverbs and often associated with physical discipline. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. Let me just suggest this. When it comes to church discipline, there is a punitive discipline. It happens the least frequent of all of the forms of discipline. It's the least ever administered. Before that is preventative discipline, then corrective discipline. That takes the bulk of all our work. But every now and then there has to be punitive discipline. And in your family, the last resort should be any type of physical discipline. It should all be training of other sorts, preventive, just instructive, and then corrective, timeouts. And only at a last resort should it be that. And a lot of people, well, I got beat as a kid, so it shouldn't hurt them. Well, maybe your dad abused you. I'm sorry. You shouldn't be beating your kids. So I have to say all that as a disclaimer, because people look at this and say, see, the Bible endorses beating. No, it doesn't. It does not at all. And that's where we're going to have a parenting class. And by my own confession, I've been the one that hasn't to do that. But maybe I've learned enough that I could share some things with young parents. Here's what you need to do. Okay? And hopefully in the future we can do that. It'll have to be on a mid-week class, but it's so essential. I love this verse. And I'll a couple things, and then we'll just wrap this up. Train up a child in the way he should go. That's the idea of discipline, right? Training. When they're old, they won't depart. Mark Copeland, whose material I think I have posted on the website, he has an excellent outline of all the Proverbs grouped by themes. He addresses this verse and says, you know, some people say that if you train them up in the Lord when they're old, they will always be faithful to the Lord. Now, there is a truism, that's the traditional way, and he says it could be that what this verse is actually saying is train up a child in the way he should go. Not in the way, but the way he should go. What do you mean? Have some parents say, you're going to be a football star whether you like it or not. Why? Because I almost won the state title, but the coach benched me, and if I would have played, we would have won, and you're going to be a star. All right? Now, how am I training up that child? The way that he should go or the way I want him to go? You say, well, what's I got to do with that? Well, some kids can't be some things, and if you force them a wrong path, they're going to be a mess. They're going to be a failure. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to rebel. Is every child born to be a doctor? No. Is every child born to be a preacher? No. Everyone, and your job as a parent to discern what type of child you have and train them up that way so they glorify God in whatever that skill set is. That's a challenge, isn't it? And college isn't the answer for everyone. Did I say that? College is not the answer for everyone. They need to go to vo-tech school. Save you a lot of money, too. But some kids should go to college, right? But you train up the child in the way they should go, and if that includes in the way of the Lord, it surely does. You can be assured, if there's fear of the Lord in your life, there's Lord, the love in your family, there's true peace in your family, and God is invited, and Jesus is a central part of your family, when they get old, they won't depart. That's a truism. It works most of the time. Now, with that being said, we're going to bring it to a close. There's a lot of other verses, but we're out of time. But I just want to show, can you do this? You can do this. Well, here's just four little things I suggest. To build your home. Like, you might be on your second marriage, some of you here. All right? Make this marriage a success, okay? You say, my kids are already grown. Well, you got grandchildren. Or you have children, help them instill these values in them so they can have successful families, right? So here's some things we can do. First of all is, take personal responsibility of your family. What do I mean by that? Your family's going to turn out the way you are. If you're a good, faithful Christian and Jesus really is the center of your life, that's going to spill over into your children. and into your wife, into your home. And we can't blame outside cultural influences and all that, because we're responsible for protecting our family from those. We can't worry if our kids are using bad language and watching porn if we have internet and TV and all the cable stuff pumped right into our home. That's on who? Me. Take personal responsibility for my family, for my marriage, and for my children. I'm the one that God has called to raise them up spiritually. Not the church, not anyone else. Those are all supplement. Camps are great. Send them to a camp. But it has to start where? In the home. Take personal responsibility. Be devoted to God. In other words, be the kind of person you want your spouse to be and you want your children to be. Because you can't expect them to be anything more than you are. Now, sometimes children rise above their parents, don't they? You were talking about the kings this morning. You had a bad king, then you'd have sometimes their sons be a great king, because I'm not going to be like that. Sometimes, but generally, however you are, that's what your children are going to be like. Then thirdly, become an expert in family matters. That's where there's a mistake in your handout. What I mean by that? There's two ways you can approach your family and building a godly family. Your marriage, raising children, everything involved in it. You can just do the trial and error approach. We'll see what works. Or you can just take, you know, the on-the-job training. Guess what a lot of it is. You know, this kid's crying. Does he need to go to the bathroom, or does he need to eat, or does he need to be burped? And you kind of hold him out because you don't want him to throw up on you. What do you do? There's a lot of on-the-job training. But a lot of people approach their whole life as a husband or a wife or as a parent just kind of trial and error. And we started with this verse. With wisdom and knowledge, a house is built. Didn't we? And treasures are filled in the rooms because of that. You become an expert on home and family, an expert on parenting, an expert on being a husband or being a wife. Well, how do you be an expert? Read all you can, talk to all the people you can, go to all the classes. Well, some of them are secular sources. So read them, weed through the stuff that's not godly, implement the things that are. But be an expert and don't leave anything to chance. Now, that's wisdom, isn't it? Anyone that wants to be successful in football, in any type of music skills or business, takes the same approach, don't they? And that's what God is calling us to do. Then when do you start? Right now. Right now. So let me just say this. We're a family of God, and I think we have a wonderful family here. And if you're not part of it, you need to ask God into your life. And really, you need to bow before your God and ask him to take you and make you part of his family. Because that's the greatest family we can be part of, isn't it? It'll be the most, it is the most successful, the most blessed family. And there's a home being built in heaven for you if you'll call upon the name of the Lord right now. Be baptized and for the forgiveness of your sins so he can adopt you into his family. And I guess the only question is, what's your answer going to be? Shall we stand? Shall we sing?